Hey everybody, welcome to the Heathen Hour. It is our first live stream on the official Heathen Hour channel. So we're just going to start off with a little bit of housekeeping right now. So because this channel is not monetized, if you would like to send a kind of like a super chat, we are hooked up to Streamlabs. So there is a link in the description. If you have a question that you feel is pressing that you would like to get answered, or you'd like to donate to the stream, you can click on that Streamlabs link because we are not yet monetized here. If you could like and share so that we can get the word out that we have moved, that would be fantastic. We very much appreciate it. We're looking forward to having a great conversation today. So today we are going to be having a conversation with Scotch and Maria on whether or not communism is better than capitalism. So before we get started on the conversation, I'm going to give you both an opportunity to introduce yourself, and we will start with you, Maria. Just let everybody know who you are and where they can find you. Before we get started on the conversation, I'm going to give you
Okay,
both an
so I
opportunity.
guess I'm a progressive left-wing SJW YouTuber. On my channel, I mostly cover social issues, or I guess what Marx would call superstructure. But today I'm here to argue for the actual socioeconomic system that is communism. And you can find me on YouTube. My channel is called Maria the Witch, and Maria underscore the Witch on Twitter as well.
Perfect. Thank you. And you can find everybody's channel links in the description as well. And now, Scotch, if you could just introduce yourself and tell everybody where they can find you.
Yeah, sure. My name, my internet name is Scotch Oikos. I am a political YouTuber. Or at least I focus mostly on politics. I've branched out a little bit into culture and philosophy and history lately, but I'm largely a I'm a YouTuber who deals in the social sciences. I fancy myself something of a political Martian, although apparently maybe that's a little maybe I'm selling myself at too high a rate there. But yeah, some people think I'm more right wing. Some people think I'm more left wing. I'm kind of, I guess, a centristy kind of guy, or at least that comes through in what I choose to cover and how I choose to cover it. You can subscribe to me on YouTube and get some of my ramblings at Scotch Oikos. It's just my name, my internet name, and you can follow me on Twitter at the same at the same name as well. So those are my two main. That's
Great. Thank you, guys. Everybody, make sure you go subscribe and check them out. So, we are going to get rolling into the conversation. So, we would like to get started by giving each of you an opportunity to define the terms here so that we can make sure that we aren't arguing past each other or, arguing against a position that somebody doesn't hold. So, Maria, would you mind just giving us a brief sort of synopsis of what your definition of communism would be?
Okay, so communism would be a stateless, classless society where the means of production are commonly and democratically owned by the workers themselves. And I'm a bit of a non-denominational communist or leftist in general, since I don't have any positions such as anarchism or socialism, which would be a transitional phase, or like revolution versus democratic socialism. I'm open to all of those possibilities, and what I care about is really the end goal of a society as I just described.
Perfect. And Scotch, would you mind just giving us a brief definition, sort of synopsis of capitalism?
Absolutely. My definition of capitalism, I think, is pretty close to just, the common definition. It's an economic system rooted in private property rights and the free exchange of goods and labor. So basically, private property rights mixed with, kind of merged with free markets. Those are the two key foundations of a capitalist economy. And that's a pretty simple definition, but I would say that that would be what I'm advocating for here, because like with communism, there are, different kinds of capitalists. There's capitalists that believe there should be a welfare state. There's capitalists that believe there shouldn't be a welfare state. There's anarcho-capitalists that don't even believe in a state. There's minarchists, libertarians, social democrats, classical liberals. There's all different kinds of capitalists, but what I'm arguing for here is largely just free markets and private property rights. That would be I think, a common definition a lot of people could agree on.
Okay, so sort of a foundational definition, something that just about anybody who holds capitalist principles would be able to be on board with that.
Yeah. All right. And just to be clear, like, I'm, like I said, I'm not going to be arguing, like, I'm not an anarcho-capitalist, and I'm not going to be arguing for anarcho-capitalism. I'm not arguing for the extreme necessarily. I do personally support some amount of regulation and you know, a moderate welfare state. That's my personal politics. But if you want me to steel man the more extreme, if you want me to steel man capitalism, like the more extreme end, I can do that as well. But, or I can just keep to the simple definition, like whatever you're looking for.
Yeah,
no, that's okay. A welfare state is bad as well.
All right. Well, everybody agrees on that, I think. All right. So, Maria, we'll throw it to you, and then we're just going to start kind of an organic conversation between the two of you. So, where you feel there's opportunity to interject, do the best that you can to not interrupt and speak over each other. But we want it to be really free form, sort of organic dialogue. So, Maria, would you mind just starting by just expressing, to the best of your abilities, why you think a communist system would be better than a capitalist system for us all, please?
Okay, so it's not really that communism is better than capitalism. Like, we just have two options to choose from, and we have to pick whichever one we prefer. But communism is the only viable alternative to capitalism, and we do need an alternative. Capitalism has had its function in the history of humanity, and it's even a requirement for communism. Marx would be the first one to recognize that, but Marx would also say that in practice, capitalism will need to be replaced just as it replaced feudalism. So if we're not talking about a utopia, that like which utopia we would find the best, and if we just analyze reality instead, the fact is that capitalism is causing a lot of problems right now and will inevitably collapse whether we like it or not. So we should figure out realistically and not idealistically how to deal with that. That's the core point of Marxism and why communism is something to be advocated for.
All right, Scott, so do you have a response for that?
I do. Why do we need to replace capitalism? And B, why would communism not create the same problems, if not more problems? Like, why do we need to replace capitalism with what you call the only alternative? And how do you know that, why do you think that this alternative, i.e. communism, wouldn't produce more problems than capitalism? Or wouldn't produce its own problems? Like fundamentally, you do believe that communism is better than capitalism because you're saying capitalism needs to be replaced, and you think the only alternative is communism. So definitionally you do think that communism is better. So why would a communist society be better than a capitalist one? Why is it so crucial and necessary that we transition from capitalism to communism?
Well, because capitalism is quite literally destroying the planet environmentally, but also economically, as you know, automation becomes a more and more sort of present threat to the system, we're going to have to find something else because that's not going to work out.
So the automation point is pretty complex. And again, I don't know why automation would necessarily be, why automation would necessarily be like that much worse under a, you know, capitalistic regime. You know, I mean, when I say capitalistic, I don't necessarily mean like, you know, hardline capitalism, but I don't know why automation would be less of an issue under communism than it is under capitalism. Like, I don't know why we'd have to totally do away with the capitalist system, why we'd have to totally do away with a system based on free exchange and property rights in order to deal with automation. Like, why would communism do a better job of dealing with automation?
Okay, because capitalism is a system based on markets, and automation is just not very compatible with markets. So as we could replace all the workers, or at least like right now, we probably could replace some of the workers with robots, but which would be a good thing because, you know, working is bad. So if we could not do that and still get things produced, that would be good. But because of markets, that would actually collapse the economy. So that right there is one big way in which capitalism puts profits and a market economy above the actual interests of humanity.
Why are markets incompatible with automation, though? I don't understand why. And as for if you're saying like the labor market is incompatible with automation, I could see your point more. But I don't exactly get what you're saying here. Sorry. Why? Yeah. Can you just explain for me why? Just in more detail, why you think that those two things are incompatible?
Yeah. So are you familiar with the falling rate of profit?
The falling rate of profit?
Yeah.
Profits are pretty good right now, aren't they? You know, the stock market's doing spectacularly. But if this is like a future projection, then please explain.
No, it's a trend that we can observe right now. There has been a study done about that. Can I link stuff in the chat or?
Oh, I'm not sure how that works on Zoom.
Yeah, I don't think you can.
I could just do it on YouTube, but I'm asking if I have permission.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so I'm going to link in the chat right now this study about the falling rate of profit and how it's something that Marx talked about, but which is actually empirically happening right now.
All right. Well, can you give us an overview of what that is?
That's just basically saying Marx was right about this thing. But in regards to automation, so with new technology, in a given industry, you can produce more goods for cheaper, and initially that's good because it brings profits up. But as competitors in the same industry catch up on that new tech, then they have to compete, and prices drop because they have to sell the thing for as cheap as possible. So then they try to make up for that by selling more stuff. So they use tricks like marketing and planned obsolescence. They take labor to the third world so they can lower cost even more. But at the same time, if you replace workers with automation, there is no one to buy those things. So eventually there's no way to make people buy stuff. And
no,
so with that...
Carry on.
Yeah, so there's no one to buy all the stuff that's being produced.
You're saying that people would have less money to buy stuff being produced, but you also said that the prices keep getting driven lower and lower and lower. So whatever money people have will go further because the prices go down. Their purchasing power increases as we produce more things and can produce more things. And again, I don't actually see a world in front of us where all work is automated. I think there'll always be work. I personally am in favor of just spreading it thinner across more people, going to shorter work weeks and such. But yeah, there'll never be a situation where people don't get paid wages. And of course, there's other alternatives as well, universal basic income and stuff like that. There's lots of different ways to ensure that people are still getting money so they can buy stuff. That's not an argument for transitioning to communism.
Okay, so prices would get so low that there would be no profit. That's the problem.
No. They wouldn't set prices so low that there'd be no profit. These are businesses. They're designed to.
Yeah, but they don't have that choice.
So you linked an article that said this is actually happening. Where's your evidence that this is happening? Right now, again, profits are, companies are very profitable these days. There's lots of profit. So how do you know this is happening or will happen? We've been through periods of vast technological advancement before as well. So, and those periods were great for people, and that was under capitalist systems. So again, I just don't see the evidence for this profit thing you're mentioning becoming a problem. I just don't see the trend really happening right now. And B, I don't think that we'd ever get to a society where there's A, no work to be done by people, or just B, where people wouldn't be given, money in order to buy products. Because that's where things like universal income and stuff like that would come in.
What I just linked is about how profits are going down and have been going down in a large sort of historical period. So there's that.
Okay.
And in regards to UBI, depending on how it's implemented, it could be, a good idea to transition into a socialist society because it probably wouldn't stop there. But
So,
most likely what's going to happen is that it's because, the bourgeoisie are still the people controlling the state. It's probably going to be implemented from the point of view of their interests. And so it probably won't be a living wage, but it will be a replacement of a safety net like Friedman and Hayek actually proposed, so that workers would have even less bargaining power and less stuff available to them, because then you could replace all the public services like healthcare and education and everything like that, and you could
Okay,
say, we don't have to treat you well because you're already being paid that basic thing that isn't even enough for you to survive, but whatever.
Okay, so you're saying that we need communism because of a hypothetical future, right?
No, it's the thing that's like already started to happen.
So I just want to be clear about something. You're a pro-profits Marxist. You
No,
want
I'm
more.
just saying,
You're saying a
no,
problem is
I'm
that
not.
there's lower profits, which I'm very skeptical of, but I can look into that.
Yeah. I'm
Okay,
not
so I
pro
want
profit. Yeah, finish. Okay.
to. Okay, I just want to get. I want to address the other thing that you brought up. You said that, we need to transition away from capitalism, and that, and the reason why is because of automation and the environment. The best thing that ever happened to the environment was the collapse of the Soviet Union. By far, communism is bad for the environment because
Okay,
communism is.
I'm not in favor of the Soviet Union.
Okay, then you have to tell me what you are in favor of, because it's a very common tactic with Marxists and communists to just kind of critique capitalism, which you can do all day long, but not be able to point to a viable alternative that's been tried in the real world. Right. So what would your ideal society look like? Because I do want to, it is worth pointing out that capitalism is incredibly efficient, and it's also energy efficient as well. When the Soviet Union, which I know you don't, necessarily endorse, when the Soviet Union collapsed, emissions in those countries fell by 40% within 3 years of the collapse. So capitalism, communism in every country where it's been implemented, where people with many similar thoughts to you, these people aren't totally different than you. These people read the same literature and believed a lot of the same things. When people
I'm
like you, like
sorry, in the USSR?
pardon?
In the USSR, people were, similar to me.
No, a lot of people, they read the same literature, they're inspired by the same thinkers, they had similar ideals to you. Like, maybe not every Soviet leader did, but in all these projects, these people weren't people with totally different ideas than yours. Like,
Yeah,
they
no,
believe a lot of these
the problem aren't the
principles.
ideas. The problem is that the USSR and a lot of failed attempts at socialism in the 20th century, they went straight from feudalism to socialism. So their sort of working class or the revolutionary class, whatever, they were peasants, not proletarians. So that came with a lot of problems that we don't really have right now, such as literacy rates were very low, so people literally couldn't vote. And that's why you ended up with a lot of authoritarian regimes. So that problem, for instance, we already don't have right now. So it's quite different. And like I said, I don't even endorse the USSR, so
Okay,
maybe
but
save
I need
that
you.
for a debate
Okay, is
with
there
someone
any?
else.
All right, is there any communist country that you're willing to defend? Is there any attempt to implement socialism that you think you could stand by?
Yeah, there have been several which were, okay, throughout history, such as the Paris Commune, Revolutionary Catalonia. Right now,
Okay,
we
those
have
lasted for less than a
Rojava
year.
in
Those two
Syria.
things lasted for less than a year.
I know. Hold on. So, those
So,
are
just
the
give me
ones
like a
we, some
sustainable,
of the
give me a
ones we had
sustainable
throughout history.
society.
Right
Let
now,
it
we
finish
have
elaborating.
Rojava. Right now, we
Go
have
ahead, Leah.
Rojava in Syria, and we have Chiapas, I believe it's called, in Mexico. And yes, those are small scale, and a lot of them didn't last very long. But that's because capitalism obviously would want to destroy anything that is a threat to that system. So they didn't really fail because of internal problems, but rather because they were crushed by the external forces of capitalism.
Well, doesn't it say something that capitalist societies are the societies that become powerful enough to do that? Like, it does say something that all the wealthiest, most powerful countries with the most influence use capitalist economic systems. Like, that is of note.
What that says is that obviously the societies which have a lot of wealthy people who get wealthy by exploiting other people, it's those societies that have enough money to then crush any attempts at progressive societies.
What? No, that doesn't make sense. When you're talking on a national level, like on a countrywide level, GDP is what matters. And it's not about because it's not the rich people, like literally the rich people that wage a war. It's the government that wages the war, and they tax the entire economy of a country. So that's where they gain the power to, quote, crush, other competitor countries from, right? So it is of note that the countries rich enough to do that are capitalist countries. So that means that they have higher GDPs. They have more wealth to play with and more wealth to the government.
I don't deny that capitalist countries have more wealth, but they have more wealth because they exploit people.
No, they have more wealth because they have an efficient economic system. They produce more stuff.
I guess you wanted to move on to efficiency anyway, so we can.
I want to talk some actual economics here and the problems with socialism. Because, like I said, on the environmental front, which I do want you to address, efficiency is very important, right? Economic efficiency often goes hand in hand with environmental efficiency, and obviously there's rational reasons for that, but we can also look at that played out in the real world. Like I said, every communist society has been horrible to the environment. The USSR was awful to the environment. Even China today, which has made a lot of progress,
China is not communist.
There is not a single country that's lasted for for more than 10 years that you will admit was communist. Right. So I have to look at the attempted communist projects. Right. And so generally speaking, the more communistic countries in the world are far worse to the environment because their industry is a lot less efficient, because there isn't the incentive to innovate and become more efficient for the sake of making profits and, competition and whatnot. Every communist country in the world, and also socialistic country, is generally worse to the environment than their capitalist brethren, right? And so we do have to look at these examples from the world, because the way we learn things in social science is by observing history and observing the world around us and doing comparative analysis and looking at case studies. That's how we learn things. It can't all just be hypothetical. So
yes, but you can't just look at any country that calls itself communist and say, oh, this is communism.
Sure.
So for example, if
look, okay, but I'll put it this way then.
In history, you'd see that the USSR was a failed attempt because they did it from feudalism to communism. So that obviously isn't going to work. Today, we don't have that problem. And this is just an example. But today, we don't have that problem. So you can't just look at any failed attempt at socialism and say, oh, that's...
But there's rational reasons why communism... there's logical reasons why communism is worse for the earth than capitalism. That would apply to, any number of societies, right? It's less I don't want to keep saying it's less efficient, but it is less efficient. Capitalism has all the incentives to be efficient, and that includes with energy, right? And so if you want a society where people are provided for, you can provide for them with a lot less damage to the environment under a capitalist system than a communist one, because your industry will be less efficient in communism. You will produce the same amount of things, but require a lot more resources and a lot more energy to do it. Capitalism is good for the environment. Let me finish my point. I let you talk for a long time about automation. I'm not gish galloping. These are actual points. Okay. Look around
after
the world.
Finish this point. Let Maria address it though, because she's had a little bit less time. To be fair, in the past, about 10 minutes or so.
So
we're talking over.
You don't like me pointing out how so-called communist countries are bad, treat the environment poorly, but I'll just look at it the other way then. a lot of the same countries with the most market freedom. Look at countries like the Scandinavian countries, New Zealand, Canada, Australia. A lot of these countries, when you look at their carbon emissions per unit of GDP, are also the most efficient in the world, are also the best in the world per unit of GDP, which is really the best way to look at emissions, not per capita, not raw numbers. You have to look at the amount of emissions for what the country actually does. They're incredibly efficient. They're the best of the earth. So not only are there reasons to believe, you know, from a logical perspective, that capitalism is better for the earth, but there's a mountain of evidence from looking around the world today and also in the past.
Go ahead, Maria.
Yeah.
Okay, so first of all, to use Scandinavian countries as examples of, you know, peak capitalism is a bit weird, because I know that they do have high economic freedom, as in less regulations for you to start a business, but they also have a lot of, you know, state stuff, like state public services. So I think it would be better to look at the US, where, you know, there are all these subsidies and lobbies to keep, you know, using oil and fossil fuels as opposed to renewable energy.
Okay, carry on.
And just in general, you guys have this idea that capitalism is a way to, you know, that like profits and human interests go hand in hand, but they actually are at odds with each other. So for example, capitalism relies on using more resources than we need, with things like, for example, planned obsolescence. So if you could, you know, just have like one phone, not even per year, but just like one phone that would last as long as possible, you could use a lot less resources than if you have to sell a phone every year. So you need, you know, to hold back on like technological advancements. So you can, you know, have the iPhone 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and it just changes like one little thing just so you can sell more. And then you end up producing a lot more than would actually be necessary.
Unless you want central planning, though, your communist society is going to have the same problem, because unless you want central planning, which you told me in the DMs you're not really in favor of, you're still going to have companies looking to make money using the same tactics. They'd just be worker-owned. You'd still have firms that look to make money. And I don't think that profits are... I think the profit motive is an important part of producing things that people need, but I don't think that profits inherently are, you know, good for society. I think the profit motive is. I don't want profits to be too high. I want there to be lots of competition, you know, lots of dynamism to make sure that, you know, it's spread out a little more. And that's one of the great things. One of the great things about capitalism is that you can get a lot of growth without, you know, too much profits going to arbitrary owners of capital, because there's competition. Like, I think it's a crazy high number. Like, I think it is 70% of wealthy families lose their wealth by the next generation. And something like 90% lose their wealth in the generation after that. There's high turnover of wealth, even in a system with lots of profits. And the profits are actually kept lower by competition, right? So I'm not in favor necessarily of like really high profits or anything. I think the profit motive is what's important. And as for using, you said the Scandinavian countries are a bad example, and America's a better example, but my definition of capitalism, the one that's commonly used, is private property rights and free markets. The Scandinavian countries have freer markets than the United States. The things you cited, like subsidies, are crony capitalism, which is a way of just pissing in the market. And they have strong private property rights as well. Their private property rights in Scandinavia are just as every bit as strong as the private property rights in the United States, as consistent, stable, and strong. So the idea that America is more capitalistic than Scandinavia just because Scandinavia has a welfare state, a bigger welfare state, is not an argument. And
so you wouldn't say that America is more capitalistic than a social democracy?
I don't think it is. It has, and look, it has a bit, and like, maybe if it had no state, I would agree with you, but it doesn't. It still has, you know, lots of taxation, a ton of debt, and a lot of spending. It has a ton of spending, right? They just spend it on different things. They still have, like, you know, a big state. I don't think that just because Sweden, you know, spends more on, you know, healthcare federally than America does makes them less capitalistic just because they spend more on social programs.
Yeah, that's fair enough. So, you were saying that the profit motive is what...
The motive is what's important.
Right. So the profit motive is precisely what leads to all the wasteful things that end up being done under capitalism just to sell more stuff that we don't really need.
But so let me get this straight, though. Okay, but you advocate a society in which it's not centrally planned or not, you know, overly centrally planned, and not everything is owned by the government. Am I correct that you don't want that kind of a society?
Not necessarily, but
okay,
I'm
so,
not
okay,
particularly
so
against it either.
Okay, because if you were against the idea of, like, you know, state communism, you know, with a similar kind of government system to what we've seen in, like, the USSR and stuff, I'm not trying to say you're in favor of everything they did, but if you're not in favor of that kind of system, you're basically just going to have worker-owned firms, and those firms are going to have the same incentives as companies do today. It's just that the wealth is going to be, you know, what would otherwise be profit will just be, you know, downloaded into wages and such. You would still have the same problem of people using dirty tricks to make people try to buy the stuff that they make.
No, because nobody would be buying anything or getting paid wages. I think that would be market socialism, and that's one type of socialism that, you know, if there's one that I'm at least a little bit against, it's that one, because I don't think it makes a lot of sense.
Okay,
as in,
so what are you in favor of then?
Well, a society where things are, you know, produced for their use value rather than their exchange value. So
carry on.
No, I was just going to say that so things are produced because, you know, people actually need their things to use rather than because they need to sell them in a market and make money off of that.
But people produce things because people need or want them. Right?
No,
like
that, right that, now, people,
the vast majority,
right now,
the vast majority of production goes towards things first that people need and then things that they want. And then there's some consumerist crap that I'm not really in favor of, but that's the externality to the broader system that overwhelmingly is focused on producing things that people need. And so what kind of society, like, are you in favor of then? Like, how would, in this ideal society, how would we determine what people need? Because you said you want to see a society where production is oriented towards things that are useful and things that people actually need. So how would we determine what people need in your society?
Well, people wouldn't be distracted by all these profit-related things that happen under capitalism. So, yeah, it would be determined that way. But I can't go into the specifics because that would be like asking the ancient Greeks to predict exactly how capitalism would work.
So you have this kind of like religious belief, like in Marx as like this prophetic person. No, you do. You think that there's like this prophecy that's coming, and we don't know concretely that it is coming. And so you're always arguing like you're arguing that it's this inevitable thing, right? And it's all hypothetical. But I'm asking, like, you seem to believe in this hypothetical. You think it would be a good thing to have a society like this. And so if we actually want to argue this in any amount of detail whatsoever, or even just argue it from a position of first principles, you have to tell me what this would actually look like. And this is a fairly simple question. There's not that many ways to calculate this. To calculate what we would need. How would we calculate what we would need in this society?
This is not, first of all, it's not a religion, okay? I just linked.
No, I said it's religious.
And yeah, like Marxist analysis of society is the less religious thing ever, because instead of starting from, you know, like we want a society that goes like this, like right-wingers usually do, instead he started from looking at the way things work now, or then rather when he was alive, and yeah, about how things would work in a communist society, like I just said, I can't answer that because that would be like asking the ancient Greeks how capitalism would work. There are, though, several approaches that people propose, such as a transition through socialism or just going straight into it with anarchy. But like I said, I'm not here to defend any one of those. I'm just saying that a profit-based society isn't going to exist for much longer. And if we want to avoid a catastrophic collapse of that, we need to move to a use-based society.
Okay, so again, you don't, the problem is you don't want to defend anything, so it's hard to actually argue details because you're not really sticking up for any particular like set of policies or detailed ideas here. Okay, so like again, if you want to sell people on communism, you say we need to get away from capitalism and communism is the way to go. If you want to sell me on the society, you have to tell me like what it would look like. Just give me some basic ideas of what would it look like. How would we identify needs? And how will we deliver things, you know, in order to meet people's wants and needs? Would you favor like some kind of system where people like, you know, plan out what they need and then like tell some kind of government agency that then tells them what to make in their different industries? Would you favor like a government, like a centrally plan, a government that does central planning and like, you know, kind of get some experts together and calculates what the society would need? Or would you favor like market socialism where it's determined by market forces? Like, I need to know what you'd favor because then we can actually argue stuff.
Well, I'm not here to advocate for a specific society. I'm just here to try and, say that capitalism isn't working and we need to look towards other alternatives. I don't have all the answers in that sense. But for example, workers running their own workplace would know what they want to produce, and what they want to produce wouldn't be based on anything. It would be, wouldn't be based on, just anything. It would be based on concrete demands that they have. And then you would have a state just to allocate resources, which would be controlled by the workers again democratically. So, yeah, the workers who would also be the people consuming whatever is produced, they would determine that.
But they wouldn't be okay. So you basically say there'll be a government that does some steering that, you know, sends out some orders. And this government would just be a democratic government like the ones we have today. Basically, people would vote and everything. And companies would be worker owned. But they won't just make things that they think that they need or know they need. And by the way, most people are really fucking stupid and don't know what they need, or are very bad at predicting what they need. Just look at the amount of private debt that accumulates, even through prosperous times. Those people, though, no, they would be companies. They'd be working in their self-interest to try to make a lot of money for themselves, for their firm, and thus for them as workers. So they would be motivated by the
There
same.
is no money. There is no money,
There'd be no
okay?
money, but
First of
how do you
all.
incentivize people to give a damn?
Because people need things.
Yeah, and there's a lot of evidence that people's needs are being met like increasingly well under capitalism.
But I just said that people would still need things under communism, so you would need money as an incentive for them to do stuff.
No, but but where's your incentive to like work more if you're not gonna like make more as a result of you working more? There is none, other than just like we'll produce like basic things we need. But then you're gonna have a much poorer society. Like what you're advocating is gonna be a much poorer society. And again, if workers control these workplaces, people are fundamentally self-interested. They're still going to be looking to make money to get more resources to get more stuff. That's how
There is
most people
no
are.
money.
Okay, but there's stuff. Doesn't matter if there's a means of exchange that is used to exchange stuff. There's still going to be stuff that has to be doled out some way, somehow, that people are going to have. So if you want there to be stuff in the society that people need or want, you know, wants are good too, they make life more pleasurable, then you're going to need a system that's going to incentivize people to produce that stuff, right? Okay, so
Okay, so you just
this
said
is
that people are self-interested and people want stuff that they don't necessarily need, but they want. So if they want that stuff, there's the incentive to produce it.
To some degree. However, that's a very messy way of doing things. Okay, capitalism has four qualities that I think make it a good system to produce for society. Firstly, it allows us to identify wants and needs in real time, right? It's very reactive. You know, you have a, you know, investors see demand for something, they see potential demand for something. In that case, they take a bit of a risk based on what people are buying and what they seem to want more of, right? And it allow and then it gives people a motive to actually produce that stuff, and that is the profit motive. So those are the first two things. It allows us to respond to needs and wants in real time. You know, things are always changing, new companies, new investments, you know, new products, all that kind of stuff. So that's in real time responding to people's demands, their wants and needs. Unlike in central planning where
Okay,
anything
then
central planning where hold on, hold on.
why, yeah, finish. points for.
Unlike in central planning, where people, like, you know, where they have to estimate what they need, and the problem is that it's very hard to make predictions about anything. So, you know, that's why central planning has been totally disastrous, like, every time it's been tried in a society. So the first good quality of capitalism is that it's reactive. And the second thing that makes it good for producing things people want and need is that it gives people a motive to actually produce stuff and to produce a lot of stuff, more stuff to go around, which results in lower prices, which is really just higher purchasing power. It means people can just have more stuff. I don't know why you're so concerned about low prices. And the third thing that it provides, the third good thing, is freedom. It gives people the freedom to try more things, to be more creative, and to innovate. And so then they can produce things more efficiently, and they can produce new things, new ideas. The best thing about capitalism is the way it really totally unleashes human liberty, human creativity, innovation, all of that. It gives us the freedom to be creative, whereas communist systems, capitalist systems don't. And it allows people who are creative to rise into positions where they can use that in a very efficient way. And fourthly, it's good because it gives people the freedom to compete. It brings about competition, which just makes the goods being produced even better. So everything about capitalism is geared towards producing a lot of things that people need or want. It's way more reactive than all the other alternatives. It reacts in real time to wants and needs, and it has mechanisms for identifying good ideas and bad ideas. You know, that's what investors are. Investors invest in something and think it's a good long-term product that people actually want and need. They take risks. Some go well, some go poorly. But it has a mechanism there for risk takers, and it allows risk takers and allows all people to use their creativity and to be innovative. And one of the problems with this, what you propose of having, like, you know, worker-owned companies, is that the workers, you know, we know what's going to happen if you give over the company to the people who, like, you don't want to have.
Okay, wages, hold on. Have means of exchange, hold on. Can we talk about those 4 points and then we can move on to that?
Yes.
So the first one, that capitalism is good at supplying, you know, demands and needs. So how come? Yeah. So how come we produce 17% more food than we need, but we still have people starving? I would say that it's because it's not profitable to.
There's not many people starving
in the world.
There's not many people starving. No, there's not many people starving when they're. All the famines since World War II have been created by war or communism.
Why do we have food banks here? Okay, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. I do a lot of work with my local food bank, but I'm not advocating for communism here. However, there are ways I think capitalism could be done better.
They're not starving. They're going to the food bank.
Not everybody has access to a food bank because not everybody lives in a city. I live in a rural community, and one of the reasons I do work with the food bank, and there's nothing incentivizing me to do this, I'm not doing this for money, is because I know that the people in my rural community don't have access to food banks because most of them don't have vehicles and they cannot drive 45 minutes to the city to go to a food bank.
Well,
so
I just looked up statistics, and according to Food Foundation, it's 795 million people worldwide do not have enough food to lead a healthy, active lifestyle.
A healthy, active lifestyle by our standards, right?
No, enough to meet, like, the minimum requirements for them to, like, I mean...
How many?
Just because they're surviving.
795 million, so...
And a lot of those people aren't in capitalist countries. Those aren't the people in the countries with high degrees of, market freedom and with strong private property rights. A lot of those people are in countries like Zimbabwe. Right, like
doesn't really matter. Why don't we help those countries if we're overproducing?
We can, and we do. Again, I didn't say I was arguing against a welfare state. I was arguing for capitalism as a mode of production. Like you said, there's some people that have to go to food banks. Okay, that's a mechanism of redistribution, which I'm not against, and that's a very good mechanism of redistribution because it's a voluntarist one. It's totally voluntary, so that's great. That's a great thing that can totally exist within capitalism. Even anarcho-capitalism, food banks can exist within. But yeah, like how many people starved to death in Canada last year?
Oh, I'm not certain. Probably not very many.
Not very many.
Capitalism
is really, really, well, Canada's a very capitalistic country. Capitalism is really good at producing food. In fact, we arguably produce, like I said, too much food. And I'd be totally down for ways of redistributing food. I'm not against redistributing, you know, the resources needed to get food. Like I said, I'm not arguing against a welfare state. This system, though, clearly, like you said, it produces too much food. And that's why some people are getting really fat. So it's like the problem, like, so again, that's an argument for it as a system. It's producing a lot of the thing that we need most.
It's producing so much that even that is a problem, as you just said, with people getting fat.
Sure, but wouldn't you rather live in a society with like a little bit too much food? And again, if it was, you know, if we, you know, kind of redistributed a little bit, you know, which I'm not against, through like, you know, the wealth through like the state or through more food banks and stuff like that, we could provide for those people. So again, that's what tweaking. You don't have to end capitalism because of that.
Okay, so you said that,
like, a lot of those European countries don't have problems with obesity.
Can I talk?
The letter,
yes.
So you said that you would be in favor of redistributing food. I guess that could include the countries that you don't consider capitalist enough. So I guess I'm just going to be charitable and assume that you would be okay with redistributing the overproduced food to countries in Africa or wherever else. So that's great. I would be in favor of
that
too.
That'd be really hard, but...
But, exactly. And why would it be hard? And why aren't we doing it now? Because it's not profitable.
But we do not everything... Like, some things aren't profitable, and that's why the government does them. If things are... Like, I'm not saying that the government should do nothing. Like I said, I came into this saying, I'm not going to be arguing anarcho-capitalism here. Right. And so look, in a lot, some of these African countries actually probably could become, and by the way, there's way fewer people starving in Africa than there used to be. Africa's starting to come out of that a bit. Some of the countries that have been most successful in Africa are, again, very capitalist countries. Redistributing food is unfortunately hard because it spoils. And look, I'm not even necessarily in favor of doing it like with, like, sending food. You can also just reallocate, like, you know, resources and capital flows and stuff so they can import more food as well as need be from, like, you know, wealthier countries that produce a lot. Like, there are food exporting countries in Africa. They were usually the more free market ones, at a time Zimbabwe, before they went insane with their policies, you know, was exporting a ton of food. So you can just, you know, I'd rather just give these countries money to then use to buy food from like closer producers and sending food from like Canada to, you know, the southern half of the African continent. That's just not efficient. I'm not against, an amount of redistribution. Nobody is. Everybody's in favor of redistribution. Unless you support like just an identical tax on everybody to go to funding the police or whatever, which very few people do. Everyone is in favor of some amount of redistribution. That's not what I'm here to argue against.
Okay, so... That's kind of the problem. I was going to say whether it be money or food, we're not doing that. And that's kind of the problem with a lot of right-wing ideologies, where you just come up with these ideas that you just like come up with out of your imagination, like, oh, we could redistribute food to Africa and the government could do it.
That kind of thing.
We don't do it. We don't do it enough. And, you know, we
could literally just do it more if you wanted.
Yes, but we don't. And why don't we do it? Well, a Marxist would look at what's happening now and would say, well, we could do that, but we're not doing it right now. And that's because it's not profitable to do that. And, you know, since society is all structured around what's profitable to do, then we don't do that. So maybe that's a problem.
We do lots of stuff that's not profitable. What do you think libraries are? Like, it's not like the reason we don't do that is not because it's not profitable. If it was profitable, some company would definitely do it. But the reason why we don't do that in particular is because we're a little nationalistic, right? We want to focus on like our country first, so we don't spend as much in foreign aid and such. And also a big part of the reason why some of these countries, again, don't produce enough food and don't produce enough stuff in general is their local policy. And policy is a huge factor in it. Compare Zimbabwe to Botswana, right? Zimbabwe is a country that is an absolute mess, no stable private property rights. They don't have free markets of any kind. It's an absolute disaster, economically speaking. And compare that to Botswana. Botswana is one of the most prosperous countries in the world. And now there's a lot of reasons for that. It's fairly resource rich, although so was Zimbabwe once. But they have stable property rights. They have a good education system. And they have fairly free markets. And they engage in free trade. Like, you can look at country after country around the world. And it doesn't matter whether you think that they were real communism or not. The point is, they went from being more communistic or more socialistic to being more capitalistic, in some cases very capitalistic, and they transformed their countries for the better. And we're talking about poor countries here. For example, I'm not look, I just want to be clear. I'm not like a Pinochet fan. I think he's a very bad person. But look at Chile. Chile in the 1960s was an incredibly poor country. It was very protectionist. It was very socialist, big government, not a strong capitalistic country. They changed that. They became very capitalistic. And now they're the wealthiest country in South America. So, and you can also look at examples. There's countries like Botswana, which is way wealthier than the countries that neighbor it, who adopt different policies. You can look at, you know, there's example after example. You know, all the states around China, like, you know, some of which are technically owned by China, but like Hong Kong, Taiwan, Macau, are all better than China. And it's no mystery why. Like, again, yes, sure, when Taiwan was formed, like, some wealthy people went, but, you know, that was a long-ass time ago, and that doesn't account for the massive disparities in quality of life and wealth of those countries. You can look at other examples, too. Eastern Europe was shittier than Western Europe when communism was in place, right? And they're still shittier because communism does that much damage. Socialism does that much damage long-term to countries.
No, that's not communism. That's not socialism. Of course it wasn't. We had established that. Well, it wasn't. What can I do?
But how it kind of was, though. They had a lot of the same principles that you have. They wanted to build a society around, or at least, you know, the founders did, a society around from each according to their ability to each according to their need. They wanted to get there.
And yet they didn't do that. So it wasn't communism.
Okay. And here's the problem with from each according to their ability to each according to their need. First of all, from each according to their ability.
Okay, hold on. Can we go back to talking about the poor countries and stuff like that?
Sure, yes.
So the countries which are poor right now in the third world and everything like that, who do you think is keeping them poor? Because the first world largely relies on cheap labor from the third world. So it's not in the interest of the most powerful or richer countries to develop those places beyond the development that they need to, you know, have that cheap labor or maybe expand their consumer markets.
They are developing those countries, though. They are. Do you think would those countries be better off or worse off without those jobs from, like, you know, big American companies there? They'd be worse off. Nobody would take the jobs from
the
American companies.
But the point is, they're still very bad now. And, you know, it's not in the interest of rich countries.
They're improving. A lot of the people around the world, like, you know, there's these stats of, like, you know, hundreds of millions of people, billions of people being lifted out of poverty as we speak and into a new global middle class. The vast majority of those people are in China, India, and Vietnam. All countries that, again, doesn't matter if you thought they were like real communism or went about it right or were ready for communism or whatever. But the point is, as they move towards capitalism, free trade, free markets, private property rights, they have lifted many, many people out of poverty. It's been incredible. And so most of global poverty alleviation comes from moving towards right-wing economic policies. Or, like, I mean, right-wing in a global sense. Like, in my country, I'm not right-wing, but in a theoretical, philosophical, global sense of the word, becoming more right-wing. And again, there's lots of countries that were colonized that are doing very well now. And a lot of it does have to do with policy. It's whether they embrace free trade or not. It's whether they embrace stable private property rights, right? Like, nobody wants to invest in a country if, you know, the government's just can potentially seize up that company the next year. And having free markets that do a very good job at producing and producing things and distributing them to people. In most cases, you can step in with a welfare state here and there. Most countries do, and I'm not against that. That's the method for bringing your country out of poverty. If your country is particularly left-wing economically, then a transition, and they're having problems with poverty, a transition rightward is one of the guaranteed ways of making your country richer. And again, example after example, South Korea, I know you aren't going to defend North Korea, but South Korea, very capitalistic, is better than North Korea. The, you know, China's periphery states are better than China. Like, the list just goes on and on and on. You can find example after example of countries with very similar histories, countries of very similar people, you know, the same culture, everything, countries with similar geography. And the ones that do better are the ones that embrace these things that I advocate for here: free exchange and private property rights.
Right. So we have to wrap it up.
And it's causal, too. It's causal. Yeah.
I just wanted to let Maria
Sure.
Yeah, sure. So even if that were true, it is kind of true that rich countries do invest in third world countries, like I said, to the extent that it's profitable to them, because they do rely on cheap labor from third world countries. If they developed these countries to the same point as the first world countries right now, they would have nobody to produce things. So they would have to automate everything. But, you know, going back to the beginning of the debate, I think that's a good way to wrap it up. Actually, we go back to the point about why it's not, why automation is not compatible with capitalism. And if we are going to automate, which I think we should, but capitalists would beg to differ, but if we are going to automate, it can't be under capitalism.
It can be. You can still have private property rights and markets. You can definitely still have markets by just, you know, in a case, let's say everything gets automated, which will never happen. We're gonna destroy ourselves with nukes before that happens. The probability of destroying ourselves with nukes within the next century is highly likely. But let's say, even if we got to that society, you can just give people money and they can use it. They can go to markets and buy stuff. You can have competition between different companies or the workers are robots and all of that. I see tons of problems with this future, but you can still do that. Capitalism would not be the problem there. There's ways to do it that will continue to further innovation, and those are private property rights and free exchange.
All right, thank you. Yeah, I feel like you guys could probably talk about this for hours. It's really interesting. You guys, a really good conversation. Thank you so much, both of you, for participating in this. And I'll give you guys both just another chance to just quickly let everybody know, in case they tuned in late, where they can find you and who you are. So we'll start with you, Scotch.
Yeah, you can find me on my YouTube channel, Scott Troikos, uppercase S, uppercase O. You can also find me on Twitter. My handle is that. And I just want to be clear here. Like, I don't want to totally discount Marxism, or I do kind of want to discount communism, but I don't want to discount Marx, you know, the godfather of the ideology, because I actually agree with a lot of what Marx said about, you know, a lot of his criticisms of capitalism I actually agree with. But I just don't believe in the alternative that he loosely proposed or the alternatives that communists propose. But yeah, I want to say here, well, please take all of my arguments to heart. Don't totally discount Marx either.
Awesome. All right. Thank you. And Maria, and now if you'd let everybody know where to find you, and I guess also if you'd like to make like a final statement as well.
Yeah, you can find me on YouTube. My channel is called Maria the Witch, and at @Maria_the_Witch on Twitter. And, well, like I said, my goal with this conversation wasn't really to advocate for any specific type of socialist system, but rather to make the point that capitalism is not sustainable, neither economically nor environmentally, nor in any way. So I would just encourage everyone to look into socialist alternatives. You know, it doesn't have to be the same thing that I would think is best, but just like consider stuff outside of capitalism, because capitalism is not going to last very long. And thanks for having me.
No, thank you for coming, both of you. I know it's late for you, Maria, so I really appreciate it.
The links are in the description to both of their channels, so check it out.
Awesome. And don't forget to like, share, and subscribe. Let everybody know that we've moved. Thank you very much, and thank you, chat, and thank you both.
Thanks for having us.